This is The Mary Davis Show, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with interviews, news, special features, and the community calendar. Now, here is your host, Mary Davis.
Good morning and welcome. I'm your host, Mary Davis. Show, of course, is The Mary Davis Show, and we have a returning guest who I've just been teasing about avoiding me, thinking that maybe I had some sort of body odor or bad breath. And I was wondering, he swears that that's not the case. But we'll soon see if he can redeem himself by being on with me a bit more often. So, since the county exec is a very busy person with three jobs, I'm going to get right down to what I want to ask. Seems to me as though there are four issues in front of me that you're sort of involved in. But the first thing I want to ask you about, and I'm going to ask every politician that is on here, and I don't care what color they are, black, white, blue, or green, and that's an article by Rod Watson. And he writes in here that all of you tolerating Palladino's bigoted rants. And I was very concerned about that because he says, you know, it's every politician when something would be happened if Barack Obama said it or some other non-white politician said, they would be all over this person. Yet there hasn't been a peep out of anybody going after Palladino, even saying something bad about him for the bigoted and terrible remarks he has made about members of the school board, particularly African-American women. So, Mark Poloncarz, here's your chance.
Well, it's good to be on again, Mary.
Thank you.
As I say, it's
glad
not the first time. We've been here multiple times in the past and glad to be back. And we'll be back again in the future.
Thank you. That's a commitment, I assume.
Yes, it is. What Carl has said, not just recently, but in the past, is reprehensible, and he's been criticized about it.
By you?
I've talked to Carl personally and saying, Carl, what are you doing? I mean, why are you saying this? And I don't get what sometimes goes on, and not just him, but other people who feel that same way and think they can publicly go out there and say these things. I don't know if he truly understands what he's saying, or if he does, the impact it'll have moreover on the greater community. I do think he believes in the things he's saying. I don't know if he understands the impact sometimes that these things will have on the greater community.
But have you said that publicly?
I haven't talked about it recently. I've talked about it in the past publicly about what Carl said, especially what he did a number of years ago when he was running for governor. Mm-hmm. I criticized him vocally. I came out and said I can't stand by and watch someone who's being derogatory to African Americans, being derogatory to women, being derogatory to other people, and say that he's the right person for governor. Private citizens have a right in our country to say whatever they want because of freedom of speech. Doesn't mean it's right. And I think Carl has to be held to a higher standard because he's an official for our school board. He is an elected official. He's been duly elected by the people who he represents in the district in South Buffalo. So he should hold himself to a higher standard. I don't know if he cares or not, but I think it's important because it sends a bad message to our community. It's very similar to what like we're seeing in the town of Lancaster with the individuals who seem to think that it's okay to criticize a Jewish member of the school board, a Nazi, because they don't like that the Cheektowaga Lancaster mascot was changed. Well, the mascot was changed because it was derogatory to Native Americans. And some members think that they can go out there and say, well, we don't think it's derogatory, and therefore we should go back to the old mascot name. The community made a decision, the school board made a decision, and people should live by it, not call other people names, such as going after a school board member like Ken Graber, who's a good man, I know Ken, who happens to be Jewish, and then say Heil Hitler to him, or this is Nazism. Well, that just goes to show that they really don't understand the impact that can have on the person who's receiving or hearing that. And I think that's what's important, is people need to know in public service that you can't just speak everything that comes to your mind, because you have to sit back and think about exactly what's the impact of it. Maybe that's how you feel publicly, and if that's how Carl feels, I mean, privately, then the people in this community need to know that. But I think it's important that he really sit back and is a duly elected representative of the people of this community. He's got to understand that you can't just say things like that. And if you do, there are ramifications for it. I don't think he cares, truthfully, which is kind of sad. And if he doesn't resign, which it appears he's never going to resign, the people of the community need to take that into account when they have their next vote.
Do you think that perhaps school board elections should be held when you have county elections and state elections and national elections?
Well, I believe school board elections should be held at the same time as regular elections just to get a higher vote turnout. What often happens, because the school board elections are held in different months on days that people truthfully aren't used to voting, the vote turnout is very, very low. It costs us more as a community to hold to pay for these elections, mm-hmm. because the Board of Elections has to set up the machines, they have to get the elections inspectors out there. It would make much more sense to hold it either on a primary day or a general election day so that you get a higher turnout of vote, and it also costs less in the long run, because we wouldn't be duplicating efforts of having to put the elections inspectors and pay for them, having to take out the elections, the voting machines and the costs associated with that. It would make much more sense to hold it either on primary day or the date of the general election, rather than have a wholly separate election that no more sometimes than 10% of the population actually votes in.
Well, in front of me, I have four issues that you seem to be quite involved in, and I'm going to give you an opportunity to talk about each one of them. And that, of course, June, you say, is Elder Month, and that's probably good. There's been a lot of situations about elder abuse that I've been reading about. And you also are involved in the Erie County Partners Join Forces on Times Beach. I guess they want to try to sort of restore that and clean it up so it looks much better. And also the Association of Erie County Governments, you're kind of involved in that, and they want the submission of a countywide efficiency plan. You're planning on submitting that to state government. I'm just wondering about that. And then there's the Albright Knox Art Gallery release. And there is something that you're trying to do with that, and you want to make it more beautiful than what it is. I like going to that Botanical Gardens. I think it's a very lovely place. So why don't you start anywhere you want and just tell us what you're up to and why you're in it.
Well, first off, June I've declared as Elder Abuse Awareness Month. And what we're talking about is there are many people in our community, senior population, who are taken advantage of, who may be abused physically. And we have an Adult Protective Service Division of Erie County Government to help ensure that people who are physically abused are taken care of. But what often happens are seniors put their trust in an individual, a con man or a con woman, who then take them to the cleaners, take their money. And we want the public to be aware that if you have a family member, especially someone who may be single, if they recently lost a loved one, they often will start putting their trust in individuals that they may not have known for a very long time, or it could be another family member. And what ends up happening is they lose access to their money, they lose access to their finances, they may sign over their home to a family member who really doesn't have the best interest of the senior in them. So what we want to do is we want the public to be aware that it's very important that you look for the signs associated with elder abuse, whether it's physical abuse, and if it's physical abuse, we recommend you call 911. If it's financial abuse, we recommend you call the Department of Senior Services at 858-8526 so that someone who's a specialist in this area can get the senior the help they need to ensure that they're not bilked of all their funds. What we hate to see is someone who works very hard for their whole life then be taken advantage of by a family member or a con man during their golden years and basically be made destitute. And it happens. On average, we have 42 out of 1,000 people that are seniors report these types of financial abuses. We know the number's probably higher because that's the reported amount. So what we want to ensure is that people realize that, and I mean 42 out of 1,000, that's about 4%. So people realize that if you see a family member who's a senior, and they had money, they had a house, and now all of a sudden they don't have money to buy food, they don't have money, their car's no longer in their name, they've probably been taken advantage of. So June is Elder Abuse Awareness Month in Erie County. We want everyone to understand that. And also if they see the signs of it, to call us in Erie County government so that we can help working with our law enforcement officials and others ensure that the senior does not lose their house, does not lose their assets, and is not taken advantage of.
Well, I've had an occasion, and Buffalo is certainly in Erie County, is that correct?
Yes, this is all over, not just the city of Buffalo. This happens everywhere.
But
in our
Buffalo
community.
Is in Erie County.
Oh, yes, yes.
And so the Fruit Belt is also in Erie County, is that correct?
Correct.
Well, Ronnie Hemphill Nichols was a guest on this show around this table and also on TV with me, and they brought up quite an issue on gentrification that mm-hmm. goes on in the Fruit Belt, feeling that a lot of seniors there are being really gone after because of their homes. Now, that has to do with Buffalo General Hospital and the university. Now, would Erie County play or can play any role in those seniors' problems or no? Are they still going to leave that up to Buffalo?
Well, the issue with elder abuse is different than gentrification. Elder abuse usually means someone comes in and, like, steals the assets of the individual, has
well,
them sign
in,
over.
In the Fruit Belt, so their assets are being stolen, well, according to what I've been listening to.
The issue in the Fruit Belt is whether or not certain neighborhoods are going to be purchased for future advancement of the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus. Now, there was the McCarley Gardens apartment complex.
Yeah, which Ronnie Nichols was quite involved in.
Correct. But the decision has been made not to touch that. Mm-hmm. After getting complaints from the community, the University of Buffalo, St. John's Church, Reverend Michael Chapman was involved and actually was going to purchase that McCarley Gardens.
It sort of stopped him in his tracks.
It is stopped. And now the county has a role if it's like actual abuse, mm-hmm. The fleecing of someone's finances. The decision on to whether or not to sell a house, and then there's what's interesting is the Fruit Belt homes have appreciated in value tremendously.
Well, it's an old community. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of houses that people bought back in, 50s?
Yeah, 50s and 60s, they may have paid $10,000, $20,000 for, which normally up until 10 years ago probably were worth no more than $40,000, $50,000, but now mm-hmm. they may be worth $100,000 to $125,000 and above because people are interested in moving into the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. If someone sells their home in an arm's length transaction, in which there was no forcible transfer of the home, mm-hmm. That's not the abuse, and that's not even in some ways gentrification. If someone is forced out of their home and their home is purchased for a development project, mm-hmm. you could argue that's gentrification, and whether that's right or wrong for the community is up to the people to say. It is something we're paying attention to. I've talked to the mayor about it. I've talked to Council President Pridgen, and it's something they're worried about because what we don't want to see is while our community gets better and more people are hired and we have a more vibrant economic outlook, we don't want to see strong neighborhoods, and the Fruit Belt had been a strong neighborhood for quite some time, mm-hmm. Be sort of cast aside and just demolished for the next building. We all agree that's not right.
And so that would be your stand on that?
Yeah, I'm not in favor of seeing the remaining homes in the Fruit Belt just be like bought out. Mm-hmm. I think you want to strengthen that neighborhood. You want to ensure that people of diverse backgrounds have the opportunity to live there if they so choose. If somebody's lived in their home for 30, 40 years, they should still have the opportunity to live in their home for 30, 40 years.
And that's a Maston district, I think, which voted for you quite a bit in your last election.
I'm not certain if that's Maston or Ellicott.
I
think it's Ellicott, but I've had strong support in the districts throughout the city of Buffalo. I'm county executive. I represent all the county. I represent the city of Buffalo from the three cities, the 25 towns, the 16 villages, I believe. So I represent each and every one of these people. I'm glad to represent each and every one of them. The issues are diverse. Mm-hmm. What matters in the town of Eden is not the same as the city of Buffalo, and it's not the same as the town of Clarence. And that's what makes the job fun.
I got to ask you this because it's really kind of been on my mind for a while when I talk to politicians. And this one politician I know did it. And I want to ask you, in your political career, have you ever had to do a campaign on your kitchen table?
On my kitchen table? You mean like meet with people and
like
come up
get,
with it?
Get money with no money and whatever, but just run your campaign and finally get elected or cause a lot of thing, and you only did it on your kitchen table.
Well, I started my campaign for Erie County Comptroller that way.
On your kitchen table?
I started the campaign for a comptroller at my kitchen table. We had meetings there. We stuffed envelopes in my kitchen table back in 2005. And as we were able to raise more money and slowly able to afford a headquarters, we moved to a headquarters. But yeah, I remember my first campaign for comptroller. It started out in the first few meetings, the first few months of it were based off of my kitchen table and my office in my home, in which I was printing things out from my my personal printer, and it was a little different than it is today. But yeah, especially when you start out, you pretty much have no choice. You're going to start out and use whatever resource you have, and if it's your kitchen table, so be it.
I've been dying to ask a lot of politicians. I know just a few that have done that, so you have done that in the past.
Yes.
The second thing that I have in front of me that you're sort of interested in, and that's the Time Beach issue.
Well, the Times Beach is a nice thing because it's a nature preserve that's open to the public. It's free. No one has to pay there. You don't have to pay to park. You can walk around. But we've been partnering with a number of organizations to...
Well, how do you keep it up? You know, if the people all over the place, I assume that there's animals, probably small.
Well, there's deer. There's large deer there. Mm-hmm. But it's part of what people pay for in their tax dollars. It's part of the county park system. Times Beach is actually owned by the city of Buffalo.
Mm-hmm. But it's why is the county doing it?
We have an agreement to maintain it. Mm-hmm. So the county is the one that maintains it. We invest our capital and our cash over there, but we can't do it always on our own. So we've had a number of volunteer efforts recently to create a more butterfly-friendly location. Mm-hmm. We've also made it much more of a repository for birds. So it's sort of a bird sanctuary if people want to come and see birds, especially as they traverse from the fall to the winter and vice versa, the winter to the spring, as they're on their trek.
Route.
Yeah, so it's right in downtown Buffalo, and very few people realize, but there's a nature preserve right in downtown, right on the Outer Harbor, and with all the other development that's going on, we want to ensure that we protect that Times Beach. We don't just turn it into condos, and we're not going to allow that to happen. So we had some partner organizations help us with some of the upkeep in the last few weeks. It's just another example of one of the services that we provide. I've had people come to me and say, well, you know, you got all these county parks, but none of them are in the city of Buffalo. And I say, no, that's not true. We have Black Rock Canal Park in Riverside. We have Times Beach. We have a lot of pocket parks along the Buffalo River. And we don't charge anybody to go there. They're beautiful places, and it's the opportunity for public to see their tax dollars at work.
What are some of the partners with the county?
Well, we have an organization called Friends of Times Beach. We've worked with the Army Corps of Engineers. Right now they're helping us with a project to get rid of what are called the evasive or non-invasive species of plant life that take over instead of from the native plant life and destroy the nature preserve. So we've been working with the Army Corps of Engineers on that.
How do they do? Just go in and pick up them by the roots?
Well, not exactly. But that's one aspect of it. You actually have to go in there and rip out some of the bad plants that will take over, but you also have to go in there with safe chemicals that protect certain types of plants and destroy other ones. Because it's a nature preserve, you want to ensure that it's done in a manner so it doesn't affect any of the animals. And if you're ever at Times Beach, you'll see not only deer, you'll see foxes, you'll see raccoons.
Foxes, really?
Oh yeah, it's amazing what's there. I'm still shocked.
How do you keep it clean?
Well, being a nature preserve, thankfully, it's not like a Chestnut Ridge Park or a Martin Luther King Park
people
where
walk
people are going.
Maybe and
people
smoke
walk
and
through. Yeah,
they, butts and paper
there's,
and different other
there,
things.
There's some walking trails, and as long as people stay on the walking trails, it's generally fine. They don't ruin the preserve area, and we have staff that goes through every other day and goes and cleans up garbage, and we have no choice because people unfortunately litter. So. I'd say the vast majority of people who go to any of our parks, they follow the rules. If they have litter, they throw it in garbage cans. But not everyone does. So that's what you have a park staff for, to ensure that everything's kept as clean as possible.
Is the park staff county?
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
So it's not something that the city is involved in?
No. The when it comes to Times Beach or Black Rock Canal Park or any of the pocket parks that we have along the Buffalo River, it's all county staff. Actually, staff that's based out of Ellicott Creek Park in Tonawanda, they take care of Ellicott Creek, they take care of Isleview Park in Tonawanda, and then they take care of all the parks in the city of Buffalo that the county owns. So it's they actually have a fairly large area they have to maintain. Mm-hmm. So that's why they do it every 2 or 3 days. They don't do it every day because they've got lots of parks to maintain.
Now, I don't know if all our listeners know exactly what a pocket park is. Can you explain that?
A pocket park is generally a much smaller area that does not have like picnic tables. Chestnut Ridge Park is over 1,000 acres. A pocket park is usually less than 100. I'll give you an example. If you're there's a park called Red Jacket Park, at the end of Smith Street in the city of Buffalo. And it's right along the water in the Buffalo River. It's actually very pretty. A lot of fishermen go there. You can take a canoe or kayak and go straight into the Buffalo River from there. But it's very small. It's long, but it's probably no more than 50 yards in width. But it's right along the shoreline, and there's areas to sit and to watch nature, but there's no picnic benches there. So a pocket park is generally less than 100 acres, which is still decent. Most of the pocket parks are really like 10 to 12 acres at most. And it's a very small area without your normal type of picnicking type of activities. So you wouldn't go there to play a baseball game. You wouldn't go there to hold a picnic with your family, but you may go there to fish. So we've got a number of pocket parks like that. In the city of Buffalo, there's a few of them right along the Niagara River as well. And I think it's important that we have these because you want to have an opportunity for people just to sit back, relax, and enjoy their life without having the constant daily hubbub of what is our activities in a city.
Something else. I know you're running for re-election, and I don't think that you have a primary. At least I haven't heard that you have one. But there is a Republican that was said to be running against you. Is that something that you may be worried about?
Well, you always worry about anyone running against you. As of right now, I do not think I have a primary. The Democratic Party is pretty united behind all the candidates. I have the support of Mayor Brown. I have the support of Council President Pridgen. They were at my announcement speech earlier this year. We've worked well together, all of us. I don't always agree on everything, but we have worked well. I will face an opponent, a Republican opponent. He's
Mr. Walter.
Mr. Walter. He Ray and I know him personally. I like Ray personally. We don't agree politically. He's much more of a conservative Tea Party type of politician. I disagree with a lot of his stances. He disagrees with mine. I'm sure we'll have a interesting debate on the issues.
So you do plan to have a debate?
Oh, yeah, we'll debate. Well, there'll be debates. And there will also be lots of discussions, community meetings. They've already started. I've been talking to many people in the community, going to lots of events. I just recently was not only in the Juneteenth parade, but walking around talking to vendors, talking to people at Juneteenth Festival, just to hear their needs and, and hear what their issues are. There's a lot of great things going on in our community, but we're not done yet. More than 20,000 new private sector jobs in the last 5 years, but we're not done yet. There's more people who still need help. We've done a lot of good things in the city of Buffalo with regards to health care. We opened the new Erie County Health Mall at 1500 Broadway, and since we opened it last May, more than 10,000 people have walked through the doors to access health care there. But we're not done yet. There's still more to do.
Is that part of an initiative from Obamacare?
No, that's actually one of my initiatives. It works in conjunction with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, but it is not something that was proposed by the president. We realized at the what's former Matt Gajewski Center on Broadway, that was a healthcare clinic for nearly 30 years, that it made sense to have good quality, affordable healthcare that was open to the public in all communities. My predecessor closed the clinic. He didn't think it was worthwhile. We realized when that happened, that actually had a negative impact on people's lives. So we worked with partners because we're not doing it alone. But we've got Catholic Health is helping us with by holding a primary care clinic. UB Dental is running the dental clinic. And then we have two partners, Lakeshore Behavioral Health and Mid-Erie Health, that are providing mental health services there. And so we call it the healthcare mall, the health mall, because just like you go to a mall to get shoes and shirts and pants, and they may be from different stores, well, you go to the health mall to get your primary care, your dental care, if somebody needs it, mental health care, from the people who know how to provide it, the separate providers. And as I said, it's been a big success story, but we want to continue to get the message out. I've been meeting with various groups and even going to organizations to let them know that the health mall is there. It's open for everyone, regardless of where you live. But it was placed on Buffalo's east side to help an area that was in need. And since, as I said, since we opened it, more than 10,000 people have walked through the door. And it is compatible with the requirements of the Affordable Care Act. So it fits into what the president has looked for, but it wasn't mandated.
I see. Of course, I need to ask you a couple of political questions. I understand that you did not take the Conservative Party endorsement, even though I assume or I've been told that it was offered.
That is correct. I'm not a conservative. I don't eschew to those values, espouse those values, I should say. I eschew them. It just wasn't right for me. I didn't feel comfortable. many of the stances that the Conservative Party stands for, I'm against. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Chairman Larigo. We talked about it many times. I could have had it, but I decided not to. I didn't think it was appropriate for me.
Now, we talked about two initiatives that you have in Buffalo as part of, I assume, would be your county exec duties. But what would be your issues in a political campaign? What are some of the issues you would be running on?
Well, I'm going to run on my record as county executive of job and economic growth that's occurred in our community.
That's one.
Yeah. So, for example, when I took office, the unemployment rate was 8.9%. It's now 5.4% in Erie County. It's a big change. Mm-hmm. That also means 5.4% of the people who are looking for jobs don't have one. So there's always more that we need to do. But we lowered it tremendously.
Is Child Protective Services Department still an issue?
The Child Protective Service Department is something we're keeping an eye on always. We have reduced the caseloads in half from where they were, and we'll continue to keep an eye on that. When I came in office as county executive, after spending 6 years as comptroller, I can tell you no one ever thought there was a problem with Child Protective Services. Mm-hmm. I never heard it as comptroller. I didn't hear it from the prior administration. There was a problem. We fixed it. It's much better. We're also going to talk about our leadership, our strong leadership in guiding this community through the snowstorms that we had this past year. For us saving the Buffalo Bills by negotiating a contract.
So that's three issues that are going to be part of your platform.
Three big issues, but truthfully, how we're trying to create a better government that's that listens to the people and tries to fulfill the needs of the people. It's not always easy to do, especially when I have a legislature that is more interested in cutting taxes than investing in the community.
That's right. You have a majority Republican-conservative legislature.
That is correct. I'm a Democrat, and I support Democratic ideals. I have a strong health and human services plan to address poverty in the community, but I have a legislature that's not really interested in funding it. They prefer funding roads.
Is that hard to work with? Does that make it difficult for you to work with or get things through?
It makes it difficult to get everything that I want to get through accomplished, yes. Mm-hmm. I'll say this. We've been able to work together on a number of things, and especially Chairman Mills and I have had a good relationship. We've known each other for quite some time. Mm-hmm. Even the Majority Leader, Joe Larigo, we've been able to work on some things. But it's just difficult, I'll say that. Mm-hmm. When you have separation of powers, which we do. Mm-hmm. We have an executive and we have a legislature. Mm-hmm. And when they're from different political parties, they don't always agree on things. And that's something that we deal with.
One other political issue I'm going to ask you to see if you're going to be involved in at all. And that is the issue of the Erie County jails. I still see people demonstrating in front of them. And I'm just wondering, is that going to be an issue?
Well, I'm not certain if it's going to be an issue, but it's something that we've worked on. And we worked recently with Voice Buffalo to pass the conditional release program in which individuals who may be in jail are given early release so that they can go back and live their daily lives.
Does this have to do with anything about people like minor infractions find themselves stuck in the holding center for, say, months when it's like a traffic ticket?
Well, for those in the conditional release program, those are individuals who have been found guilty of a crime. Mm-hmm. If you're in the holding center, you are actually being held there in anticipation of trial. Mm-hmm. The conditional release program is for individuals who've been convicted of a crime. Mm-hmm. And now, let's say they have a 2-year sentence. They theoretically could be up for parole after a year and a half. Mm-hmm. This would be giving them an opportunity even before that to go out, to be under the auspices of our probation department. Mm-hmm. So it's like instead of serving the remainder of your term, going on probation for the remainder of that period. So that's a little different than if somebody's in the holding center. Mm-hmm. We deal with the issues with the holding center and the jail. Those are managed by the sheriff. But we do provide health care and mental health services. The sheriff is independently elected, so I cannot tell the sheriff what to do. Mm-hmm. But we do work with the sheriff's office to change what had been not a great place. And I'll say this. We're working with the sheriff. We work with the U.S. Department of Justice to ensure that people, if they are in a holding center or jail, they get the health care, they get the mental health service that they need. They're treated with respect and dignity because everyone deserves respect and dignity.
I'm being told that you're on a very short time frame, so I just want to give you an opportunity to mention the two other things that came to my attention that you're concerned about. And one is the Association of Erie County Governments for the submission of Countywide Efficiency Plan and the Albright Knox Art Gallery. If you just want to go over those two things really
quickly. Well, the Albright Knox, very quickly, we have a public art project in which we're trying to bring into all communities art that's paid for by the Albright Knox Art Gallery. Mm-hmm. People have heard of Shark Girl downtown Buffalo, but we're going to be seeing a lot more across the greater community. Right now there's an exhibit at the Botanical Gardens that's open. Mm-hmm. It's free. You don't have to pay anything to see it. My goal is to bring art to more people. Mm-hmm. We see art get cut back in schools. I want to see more art in the public. Mm-hmm. So the Albright Knox pays for the art. We pay for some of the costs associated with running the program. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to the efficiency proposal, we worked with more than 20 local municipalities to come up with a plan to reduce costs over the next few years. We submitted that to the governor's office. We're waiting to hear if it's accepted. If it is, then homeowners will receive a slight rebate check in the mail from mm-hmm. the state. We put a lot of time and effort in to come up with this plan, mm-hmm. and I'm very proud of it. It's not the be-all, end-all. There's always more work that could be done, but mm-hmm. because we worked with our partners in local government, mm-hmm. The people of Erie County will be receiving a small tax rebate from New York State.
Well, I'm a homeowner in Erie County, so I'm looking for my $1 million check.
$1 million you won't get, Mary, but you might get a rebate check for $25.
I want to thank the county exec for being with me for the time he was able to spend with me this morning. What would you like to leave our listeners with?
Well, as always, if there are issues that my office needs to be aware of, they should call my office at 858-8500. Once again, that's 858-8500. If you're looking for health care, if you need a doctor or you need a dentist, you don't have one right now, you should consider the Erie County Health Mall, your doctor and dentist at 1500 Broadway. We made that number real easy to remember, 858-8888. So people know that number from a commercial related to an attorney. Well, if you're not feeling well, don't call the attorney. Call the Erie County Health Mall at 858-8888.
Thank you very much, Mark, for being my guest this morning. And I hope to talk to you much more often.
We will be talking again, Mary. No doubt about that.
I hope so. And that's our guest this morning, Erie County Executive Mark Polenkars, who stopped by to say hello. And I'm glad he did. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was good to be here.
And enjoy the rest of your day.
Same with everyone.
I want to thank the county exec for being my guest this morning. And now a show that was really quite popular. I want to reintroduce parts of it. So for those that didn't catch it last week and that you can get it this week, I was just really happy to have Muhammad School of Music here with the maestro Andre Muhammad and his daughter who came on and they played a few pieces for us, and it was really great, and there were a lot of requests for it. So for those of you that did not get to hear it last week, here's some of it right now, and thank you so much for tuning in. That was father and daughter playing that. That was really good. And that's what's called a duet. And they make songs, they compose specifically for two or three or four violins.
Yes. Yeah. That one was for two violin solos. And then I had the piano part on my iPhone here. And we've done this piece with full orchestra. So there's a way, there's
like
an arrangement.
Like the Philharmonic?
Yes.
Big?
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wow.
Excellent, yes.
And because there's a lot of violinists. I think the last time you were here, I was mentioning the fact that I was amazed at the number of violinists. These are like modern singers in their backgrounds.
Yes.
You know, with Aretha Franklin, all these. Mm-hmm. And you hear the background, all these violins.
Yes, yes.
You know, I was just amazed that so many violins make up these backgrounds to these artists that are playing.
Yes, it is an outstanding instrument. It's a very universal instrument. So the violin is one of the only instruments that can play probably almost any music style.
With artists like Michael Jackson, I think.
Yes, Michael Jackson.
In his background music and I'm trying to think of who's one Purple Rain person?
Mm-hmm. Prince, right.
Prince, yeah.
Prince,
his background music, you know, you can hear violins. I was so amazed at that. I said, my God. Yeah. You know, you think of violins as someone all dressed up in a gown or whatever, and they're sitting down and playing these real stately people. And then to hear them backing up Michael Jackson or Prince, you know, it's quite an awakening for me.
One of my instructors who passed away, his name is Charles Veal. I was introduced to Mr. Veal from Minister Farrakhan, and then I later learned that Mr. Veal was the orchestra composer for most of the great string parts you would hear in the music of like Earth, Wind, and Fire, Linda Ronstadt. Uh-huh. He was the one that wrote those orchestral parts and conducted the orchestras in those recording sessions.
Oh, my goodness.
He's just an outstanding musician. And so whenever I have an opportunity to write something or compose something or perform something, I'll write string parts for that that the Mohammed School of Music Orchestra will play, you know, along with the band, and they'll play those string parts.
Oh, my goodness. Are you going to play something modern? You know I'm trying to get around to Michael Jackson. You know, this is not what I'm fishing around here for.
We didn't bring Michael Jackson today. We're actually getting ready for this concert we're going to do next week, Sunday, June 14th. We're doing, Amira will be performing the Four Seasons by Vivaldi, one of the greatest compositions ever written. She's doing the season called Summer, which is an extremely challenging piece.
Can you play that for us today?
Not today, but if you come June 14th, you'll hear it live with the orchestra.
With the orchestra.
And I'm going to do another great piece by a composer named Mendelssohn. He wrote one of the top violin. If there's a top 10 list of violin concertos, this piece is on. It's the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto in E minor. I'll be performing that piece on this concert June 14th. So it's going to be a lot of music happening.
Oh my goodness.
Leading up to heading off to New York City.
Okay, well, you got it. Well, you're teasing us now. Now we got to hear some more stuff here. You've teased us into this. So what else are you going to do with after you put in that tease?
I guess I'll play a little bit of a piece. One of the pieces that Amira is going to perform on Sunday, June 14th, she's going to dance to.
Oh.
And the piece is for violin solo. And when you think ballet, what makes a ballet is it's a musical, it's a dance set to classical music. So this piece
is kind of like the Nutcracker suite.
Nutcracker is a ballet, yes. That she danced actually back in December. She danced the lead role, which is called the Sugar Plum Fairy.
Yes.
She danced that role this past December. But this piece is titled Meditation from Thais, which is an opera. And
it was made for the ballet?
No, but Amira has choreographed an original ballet to go along with this piece. So I'm going to play the violin. Your listeners can't see it, but if they come June 14th,
they'll be able to see
her dance the ballet to this piece.
And you choreographed that?
Yes.
And you're only 14?
Yes.
Oh, good grief. You're putting me kind of to shame here. I can still talk, though. I can do a lot of that.
So this is just a little bit of meditation from Thais.
Okay. Thank you. You know, when I listen to that, it reminds me, I can sort of, and my sister used to tell me how she would do it. I can shut your eyes and you can think back. And I was thinking while you were playing that, this was kind of like two ill-fated lovers.
Yes.
And they were on their way, and that was kind of like the end of it. They're sort of saying goodbye. There was like a mean father or somebody in there that was separating them out. And I could see them saying goodbye to one another as you were playing that. And I bet that's what
That's actually not too far from the story of the opera. The way it goes is Thais, the main character, is a woman. She's very influential in her city. And there's a holy man or a wise man that comes, and he meets Thais, and he's able to bring her over to his, you know, his whatever his faith is or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And so he leaves to go to prepare for their wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And when he comes back, he finds out that Thais has passed away.
Oh.
And so the composer of this opera's name is Jules Massenet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at that point in the opera, which is the most climactic point of the opera,
mm-hmm.
you know, what makes this piece special is rather than have another song, because opera is all singing,
mm-hmm.
rather than have another song, he wanted to have that emotional tragedy expressed through violin.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's called the Meditation from Thais, or it's what, you know, his prayer is meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And what the violinist has to do, any violinist that plays this piece, is they have to be able to convey that emotion. They have to be able to make the violin sing. I mean, this mm-hmm. this piece technically is not as challenging as maybe something from Tchaikovsky or mm-hmm. Beethoven or Brahms,
mm-hmm.
but what the technicality is can you make the instrument sing? And if you can do that, that's the mark of a true violinist. And that's what makes this piece so beautiful, that story, that understanding, and being able to convey that.
Isn't that something?
And then Amira has taken that piece and taken the violin and kind of put dance and ballet and motion to it, which makes it even more significant,
mm-hmm.
Which she'll perform on June 14th.
Well, we got to go there June 14th, then. You have to make sure I get a ticket
yes.
so I can come and hear her. I can't wait to see her. Well, we'll be seeing her dance a little bit. So will a lot of other people, several mm-hmm. thousand perhaps, will be looking at you dance. And also, that's on the internet as well.
Yes.
So you can take that down off the internet. You can go to the internet and see yourself doing it there, too. Well, that's going to be really great.
Yes.
This is just something. So you have time to do another one?
Yes. Amira can do a part of the Prelude and Allegro. She only got through the Prelude, but we'll send her to the Allegro part, which is the faster, more challenging part.
Is that an author or a composer in this century? Or
Kreisler was late 1800s,
mm-hmm.
But this piece is kind of like a staple piece that every violinist learns.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you want to go to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as I mentioned, Meditation from Thais is on that list. Mm-hmm.
That came through to me. That's what I was thinking. That reminded me when I shut my eyes, I could see sort of like this did not turn out well.
Right, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very emotional. But it's a piece that all the great violinists use as an encore.
Mm-hmm.
Because after you know, we may perform a great violin concerto with notes flying all over the place mm-hmm. and two or three mm-hmm. notes at the same time. But then the audience wants to know, can you make the instrument sing? That's the real test.
That's
and if you can do
test.
That,
uh-huh.
then, you know, then you've made your mark
That's
as
funny.
A violinist.
You know, I like that phrase, can you make the instrument sing?
Right,
that has
right.
to, it would seem to me that would take a lot of talent, a lot of practice, a lot of dedication, and many, many hours.
Yes, yes. It's
To make your instrument do that.
It is a lot of practice. I this past fall, I don't want to date myself, but was I think my 31st year since studying the violin. I don't even count the years anymore.
You don't count.
I've done it all my life. And she started. Amir started violin when she was a year and a half.
Isn't that something?
There was a time when
played
I taught
all of your life.
I taught
she's
violin.
Only been in this world 14 years.
Yeah, right. there was a time when we taught violin lessons out of our home
mm-hmm.
when Mama's Music first got started, and I would have an extra violin next to the piano in the studio, and when I would teach students, she would come and take that violin out of the case and play the extra violin. It was a lot bigger than her, you know, her size at the time, but she would play that violin. So we went and we bought her a violin size, which is the smallest size violin. It's called a 32nd size, about the size of my hand.
Uh-huh.
But it's a real instrument, real wood, real strings, uh-huh. real playability.
It's just small.
And yes. Mm-hmm. And she started with that violin. And by the time she was 8, she did her first concert with the Philharmonic.
Isn't that something? That's a major event. That's major.
By the time she was, were you 11 as the concertmaster of the GBYSO or 12? By the time she was 12, she was one of the top violinists in this area.
Oh, my goodness.
And now at 14, she's one of the top ballerinas in this area.
She's going away to New York City.
So
you hopefully. Go, girl.
So she'll do maybe this hard part of the Preludium Allegro now, okay? And then I want to share her website one more time, too, because I want to make sure we get that out. It's important. But the website that we're using to fundraise for her American Ballet Theater Summer Intensive is on GoFundMe, GoFundMe, mm-hmm. GoFundMe.com, and then you put like a slash or like mm-hmm. little sideways line, and then you put her tag, which is AMI for mm-hmm. Amira, AMI, ABT, American Ballet Theater, mm-hmm. and then NYC, which is New York City. So mm-hmm. you put in the tag AMI, ABT, NYC, and that takes you right to her page. Our goal was $15,000.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we're at $12,000.
Isn't that
so
something?
We're about 3 weeks away. We need
I wish
like
I had known. I could have got my boss in here to listen to her and could have got something for that.
We are almost there. We're so thankful for all the donors that have contributed to her.
Mm-hmm.
I was out of town last week, and one of the guests that was with me out of town was from this area, and even though he missed Amira's big recital that she did May 17th,
uh-huh.
he pulled out his checkbook and wrote a nice four-figure check towards her.
Wow.
Ballet Summer Intensive.
Wow.
So we're almost to the goal, but we hope that your listeners can tune in and help us. And even if you missed that website, you can call us at the music school
mm-hmm.
and ask how to send something in. And the music school
number?
Phone number is 881-5088.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's 881-5088. You can call and ask for me or leave a message,
mm-hmm.
and we'll tell you how you can send something in to help her get to New York City American Ballet Theater this summer.
Oh, my goodness. I wish I had known earlier. We could have had, try to get you something from here.
Yes.
We'd have got something in here. Well, we'll do our best.
Yes, thank you. Yes. So this is the Allegro part from the first piece that she played called Preludium Allegro. It's a little faster, a little more notes to play, okay? Are you ready? Yeah, here we go.
Thank you.
I was amazed. I'm looking at this 14-year-old young lady. She's dancing on this violin. You know? That Juan is just dancing on this. Oh, my goodness. That was just marvelous.
Thank you.
That was really great. Encore. That was really great. Oh, my goodness. That was something else. Our show has gone since we only got about 5 minutes in here. What do we got, Kev? Oh, we got more? Oh, great. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm looking at this, so we should be looking to here. Oh, we got 6 more minutes. Okay. If you want to play something, that'll
yes.
be fine.
I did want to share a little bit about her American Ballet Theater Summer Intensive.
Uh-huh.
As I mentioned, the American Ballet Theater is one of the top ballet companies in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And when they host their Summer Intensives, the Summer Intensive is not quite like a summer camp. It's more like a concentrated course that they mm-hmm. take. It's 5 weeks, and she's going to be training with some of the top ballet coaches mm-hmm. In the world.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be in New York City during that time, and hopefully the training that she'll get will hopefully open more doors mm-hmm. for her to go to the top of this art form. As we mentioned, just like with the violin, you don't see very many black or Latino instruments, playing instruments like the violin.
Mm-hmm.
And the same it is in the ballet world. And so we're hoping that with both of her skills and mm-hmm. The other talents that she has, that she'll be able to make some opportunities for herself, and then hopefully do as her parents have done, and then come back and share mm-hmm. Share that gift that she has, just like my parents gave me the gift of the violin and music
mm-hmm.
That I'm now using to share. Hopefully she'll be able to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we are asking the community to support her. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, she's the first dancer from this area in 30 years, which is a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And all the ballet instructors talk to each other. So Mira's ballet instructor, Marvin Askew of the Buffalo City Ballet,
mm-hmm.
He trained her from the time she was 3. And up until now, and they all talk amongst each other, and so
he's still in training. Then.
Uh-huh.
We never stop training.
You never stop training. You're always training.
So very prestigious opportunity for someone from this area, mm-hmm. from her ballet school,
mm-hmm.
from this area to be able to go to be in a training like that. She'll be with mm-hmm. dancers from all over the world,
mm-hmm.
Who have competed to be able to be at this school.
Mm-hmm.
For these 5 weeks, but we're asking the community to help support her. Again, it is very expensive
mm-hmm.
to live in New York City mm-hmm. for a weekend, let alone be there for 5 weeks.
Yeah.
On top of the tuition, on top of the supplies.
Like a dormitory at the school?
No, they don't. We'll be living in an apartment
mm-hmm.
In the heart of New York City on mm-hmm. Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be very exciting, mm-hmm. but we hope to get the best out of it that we
mm-hmm.
can.
Mm-hmm.
And so if any of your listeners would like to send a donation, there's nothing too small
mm-hmm.
or too great
mm-hmm.
To help us make this possible. They can call the school at 881-5088.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the number is 881-5088.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can go to the website, which is www.gofundme.com/AMIABTNYC.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see all the donors that have donated. You can donate anonymously. You can see, as I mentioned, my aunt, supermodel Beverly Johnson, one of Amir's top donors,
mm-hmm.
And others who have just
Beverly Johnson is your aunt?
Yes.
Oh
yes,
my goodness! You come from a talented family, and in different aspects
yes,
of what you're doing, entertainment.
As I mentioned, she was here for Mira's big recital that she gave May 17th to
mm-hmm.
Serve as the host, and she supported my career my entire life.
Uh-huh.
And I shared at the concert that, you know, when I first started studying the violin, if you could imagine what that may have sounded like.
Mm-hmm.
But it's our family, my parents, my aunt, aunts and uncles who encouraged me to continue
uh-huh.
to where I am today. I couldn't imagine what I would be doing without the violin.
Oh,
and so we
goodness.
Want our community to support uh-huh. and encourage Mira the same way.
Uh-huh.
So thank you, Ms. Davis, for having us on the show.
Oh, I'm more than that. And now I know the question I wanted to ask you before we go. Swan Lake, maybe that was the ballet that I was trying to think about. Is there such a ballet?
Yes. Swan Lake is by the great composer named Tchaikovsky.
Okay, that was Russian.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
that's what probably school. What I was thinking about. And that was, what, 1800s, I guess, when that was
done. Yes, yes.
Have you ever danced that?
No, I would like to, though.
You'd like to, though? I'd love to see. I bet you'd be great at it, too. I really do. I want to thank you very much. You want to give those phone numbers out again and numbers just so that if you didn't get it, they would get it now.
Yes, the number to the music school is area code 716-881-5088. You can call, leave a message, and say you heard us on the radio and you'd like to send something.
Uh-huh.
And I'll personally call you back. And then the website again is www.gofundme.com/AMIABTNYC.
Okay. And Amira is going to be there. And if she's anything like she was this morning, it'll be a fantastic thing. I'm looking for a ticket. I want to go.
Yes, we have one for you.
And that's it for this morning. I want you to stay with the station throughout your day.
You've been listening to The Mary Davis Show. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Mary Davis, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.